welcome to the new SmackDown summary. This is episode 10, I think, as I Google to make sure. I'm Kenny McIntosh, your host. I am from Scotland. I work for Inside the Ropes primarily. I'm doing a tour with Matt Hardy in November. Tickets have just went on sale and half of them are gone. I also work for What Culture, which people think I don't enjoy, but I do because they pay me money. I'm also joined by Sandra. She drinks a lot of liquor that is better than the stuff that I drink and makes fun of me because she doesn't like the liquor that I drink because it's not good enough for her. She is American and she hates The Undertaker. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, to be fair, the liquor you drink is better than the beer you drink most of the time.
I'm drinking beer right now. While we podcast, I am.
What are you drinking?
No comment. So, let's get on with the SmackDown summary, episode 10, as I sit from my Coors Light. So,
oh my goodness.
It was four for $4.99.
Not worth it.
So, just wait until Sandra and I are in Orlando together at WrestleMania. We're buying beer together. Oh. Please come and join us and buy us beer. And if you want to be awkward, speak to Sandra. She deals with it better than I do. So, SmackDown live from Cleveland, Ohio at the Quicken Loans Arena, which is a terrible name for an arena.
It is a terrible name for an arena. I mean, there are just a lot of terribly named arenas, right? Like the era of sponsored arenas. We talked about this last week.
Yeah, we did. So, SmackDown Live this week proves it is the superior brand, whether that's on pay-per-view or TV or recap shows. It's pretty much better than Raw, and they do it with half of a quality of roster that Raw does.
Yeah, no, it's great. SmackDown continues to be compelling. SmackDown continues to make me care about people who I didn't think it was possible to care about. SmackDown continues to tell me stories. SmackDown continues to make sense. I love SmackDown.
Perfect. So, let's get into it. So, this week on SmackDown, we open up with Randy Orton coming out. He talks about Bray Wyatt, and then he goes... He basically says he's going to go and find Bray Wyatt, and that was that.
See, I just said that SmackDown makes a lot of sense. There's a caveat.
To be fair, now, I'm going to play the role of Sandra here. For one time in my life. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to this because you followed me over from What Culture or you've seen one of the tours or whatever way it is that you got to this podcast, you might think that I try to look at wrestling in an analytical way. And I do, for the most part, right? Like, I do try to.
Yeah.
But sometimes, something's a pile of shite and you kind of like it. I loved Randy Orton going to find Bray Wyatt. It was one of my favorite things because it was so stupid. So stupid that it made me laugh. And every segment made me laugh more and more and more. So we will get into those segments as we go on. But at the beginning, we were setting that up from Randy being in the ring. Well, I guess we don't really need to talk about the in-ring segment. There's not really anything to talk about there, right?
Really. I mean, Randy Orton just kind of talked and said Bray Wyatt was afraid. And then Bray Wyatt was like, have you ever heard of Hansel and Gretel? Because that's relevant to this conversation.
It's true. We then get Charlie interviewing Dean Ambrose. He talked about AJ and Cena, and he beat John Cena, who's old news. He would make AJ Styles cry later on. Standard silly Dean Ambrose promo. Then we got an 8-man tag team match. American Alpha and Rhino and Heath Slater against the Usos and the Ascension. Now, can I ask you a question, Sandra, that I was wondering the answer to?
Sure.
So, we come back from break, and in the ring are three teams. The Ascension, American Alpha, and Rhino and Slater, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we come back from break, Rhino and Slater's music is playing.
Right, so they did not get an entrance.
No. So, here is the question. If you have a match with four tag teams, two heels against two babyfaces, as far as I knew, two heel teams come out, then the two babyfaces teams come out. So here, what it seems like it happened, because, like I say, in the ring are the Ascension, American Alpha, and Rhino and Slater with the music playing. Then we get the Usos. So does that mean that in the arena, the Ascension came out, then American Alpha came out, then Rhino and Slater came out, and then the Usos came out?
Well, I mean, we don't know if American Alpha or the Ascension came out first,
But whether they did or they didn't, it makes no sense.
But it was split up, for sure. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, Sanji, you need to find out. Be prepared for these podcasts.
Well, I mean, I wasn't there.
Well,
I don't know anyone who was there.
You could have found a spokesperson. See how I said spokesperson, not spokesman?
Yeah, I'm very proud of you.
So we
I'm not the investigative journalist here, Kenny McIntosh.
Neither am I. I'm the hack journalist. So, anyway. The Usos have new music. What did you think of the new music of Jimmy and Jay?
My first thought was, Kenny will be so excited that they have new music.
I was so excited.
I knew you would be. I like that they have new music, too. I like that they have new music. I mean, I think the music itself is fairly generic, and I think they're kind of dressing like Unico now. But, yeah,
listen, don't you dare compare them to that atrocity. The Usos don't have bikes or bicycles.
No, they don't have bikes, but they're dressing kind of like Unico. Like with the slacks and the
Who was the other
tank
one?
Top on the one. Camacho.
Camacho. Which to me sounds like a mule. It does.
The Tongan they pretended was Mexican because who can tell the difference?
We had the Usos against the Ascension. The Usos and the Ascension against Rhino, Slater, and American Alpha. The Ascension have, well, Connor. Connor's the one who had the full face paint, right? Or the half face painted, right? Am I getting that right?
Well, I mean, Victor's the one that has the long hair. I can't remember who did what with their face paint.
Victor's the one. Victor has face paint. Yeah, but Victor, long-time wrestling fans will remember at the 1990 SummerSlam, Sensational Sherry came out dressed as a cat on her face. That was what this reminded me of from Victor. So, you know, he brought up a nice memory for me. So
I was
going to
say, you love that.
Yeah, so he brought up a nice memory. But in the end, the Usos defeated Heath Slater. They got a win over the tag team champions heading into No Mercy. I enjoyed it. I thought it was decent. I think that the Usos probably should take the titles at No Mercy. That's where I'm kind of at in my mind right now. But what did you think of this 8-man extravaganza?
It was pretty fun. I mean, like, it was a fun enough match, right? There's nothing super exciting to say about it. It wasn't like a 5-star classic or anything like that. But it kind of got across the point. And I like the fact that it wasn't just the Usos wrestling Rhino and Heath Slater, or just the Usos versus American Alpha again and again and again and again. But you could very well see in the match that the story going forward is going to be the Usos and American Alpha. Like Heath Slater and Baby Rhino, or Beauty and the Man Beast, which is their tag team name, Kenny. You didn't even bring up the fact that they have a tag team name.
That's not the tag team name.
It's a tag team name.
It's not their official tag team name.
Yes,
that
it is.
No, it's not.
That's what they're calling them.
Hang on. Let's go to Wikipedia here.
They said it on commentary plenty of times.
The Beauty and the Man Beast.
I mean,
No results.
That doesn't mean anything. They said on commentary, Beauty and the Man Beast. That's what they're being called.
Yeah, but that's like calling Randy Orton the Viper.
Yeah.
But that, okay. I mean, it's put it this way. I prefer the name to TM61. And what was the name I hated more? The
one DIY.
Oh God. DIY.
Sorry to bring up that painful memory for you.
Oh, that was so bad.
It's really bad, and they're so good, but the tag team name is so bad.
DIY.
DIY.
So bad. John Cena had a backstage interview.
Do it yourself, and they're a team.
Yep. Listen like, to the irony, ladies and gentlemen, of this atrocity.
I like the idea of Heath Slater and Baby Rhino, like, continuing to be a team, or even maybe amicably splitting after they lose the titles to the Usos, but I think you're probably right that they're going to lose the titles to the Usos, and it's going to be the Usos and American Alpha going forward. But I kind of like the way they're setting up the story, because they're I like the way they made this an 8-man tag, I think was my original point, because it's not just the same two teams wrestling over and over and over and over and over. See, for example, New Day versus Club.
Burn. You can listen to the Rush Draw Rundown to hear what that's all about. if you can spare 15 minutes in your schedule. This was good. I liked it. And I do hope that Rhino and Slater remain best friends once this is all said and done.
I love their dynamic.
You would. John Cena was interviewed and asked about, the main event tonight. What's he going to do at ringside? He put over AJ Styles, he put over Ambrose, but he said that, you know, he's there to prepare and he wants to be the 16-time world champion. Here we go. Here's the beginning of Randy Orton's journey. It's so good.
No, can I say something about John Cena?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Even before the Talking Smack promo, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even this promo here, where Charlie asked, does it matter who's going to be champion going into your match at No Mercy? The correct answer is no, it does not matter who is champion going into the match at No Mercy, because I will beat them both, right? Mm-hmm. But the way John Cena said that, he seems to be pretty passionate about what he's doing right now. And John Cena always comes off as, like, he's always going to purport to be passionate about whatever feud he's in. Right now, he seems to actually kind of have a fire lit under him. And he looks like he's having fun performing. Like, just the way he did his promo and then he goes, rah, into the mic as he's walking off. It was like, he's just having fun with this. And I appreciate that. And I like that, John Cena.
See, I get the vibe, and I'm not saying this from any knowledge of it, but the on commentary and the sort of narrative that WWE have been telling for the last couple of months is that John Cena's old.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that annoys him. And I think it does. And I think that what he's doing here is he's kind of going, do you know what? If you want to make me the old guy, I'll be the best old guy there can be.
Yeah.
And he's doing it. He's really knocking it out of the park, as we will talk about in a little bit. So let's just kind of put all these Randy Orton Bray Wyatt bits together. There's no point in talking about one bit and then leaving it. So here is the summary of what happens. And then I'm curious to hear, because Sondra's not said yet whether she liked this or not. So I'm curious to see what side of the fence she sits. I loved it because I feel like I'm Sondra for the day. Randy Orton walks into a darkened locker room. There's an arrow pointing in a direction stuck to a wall of lockers. He follows and then he turns the arrow the other way, and then the camera pans back and the arrow has been turned back to the way it was originally, and Eric standing in his sheep mask. Then we got a promo with Wyatt somewhere in the building talking about how Orton was never one to take direction and his hourglass is running out. Standard Bray Wyatt pish. Then Randy Orton walks by a power junction box that says, only one way out, choose wisely, written on it. A door had Predator or Prey written on it. Another door had... then he opened one door and there was a Randy Orton cardboard cutout, but the cardboard cutout was from like 2007 with the eyes taken out. Randy seemed to get freaked out by it. He then tried to open another door, but as he opened it, the camera pans back and Eric Rowan's on the other side. Randy doesn't fully open it.
Okay, my question about this.
Sure.
Could Randy...
you're absolutely correct to question some of this.
Okay, I mean, I have so many thoughts about this, but
what's your question?
So many thoughts, but my question about this specific thing: could Randy Orton see Eric Rowan?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
No, yeah, he couldn't. He began to open the door, and then he thought, I don't think this is the right way to get to Bray Wyatt. So he left.
Okay, that's important to my point later. Continue.
Okay, so then once Randy Orton walked away, Eric Rowan kind of jiggles the handle a wee bit to indicate that maybe he's locked in, maybe he is hungry. I don't know what he was doing that for. Then we get another backstage with Bray Wyatt telling Orton that when one door closes, another door opens, and when the door is wide open, you need to be careful. then Bray Wyatt's backstage and he's wondering where Randy Orton is, and he's disappointed that Predator hasn't shown himself. And in one of my favourite camera angles of the year, legitimately, the rest I love because it's so shite, but like, in one of my favourite camera angles of the year, Bray Wyatt's talking absolute rubbish. Tripe. And as he's doing it, the sheep mask comes up, and for a brief second you're like, oh, it's Rowan, and then you see the vest and you see that it's Randy Orton. So Randy Orton's got the sheep mask on, Bray Wyatt's kind of just, you know, going insane. And he turns around, Orton starts trying to beat him up. Bray Wyatt runs away. And then Orton kind of looks at the sheet mask like he might make love to it, but he might like steal it. Then he puts it back on, he sits down, and he sings, "He's got the whole world in his hands." Randy Orton, God bless you, sir. You deserve a slammy for this because this was so preposterous, so stupid that I loved it. Because what Randy Orton did was find a way for me to be taken away from the fact that Bray Wyatt's not as good as he used to be and enjoy something that Bray Wyatt did. So I was a big fan of this, but Sandra, we have teased the listeners long enough. You have not said what you thought about this yet. You have plenty of thoughts to give us. What did you think?
I have so many thoughts about this. You want to know an interesting thing about the end bit where Randy Orton's sitting in the chair? Okay, like remember how as re I don't know which version of it you watched, probably a version that was as aired on television, right? Like, you know how they pan back to Bray Wyatt and he seems to be mouthing something and you can't tell what he's saying? They cut that from Hulu. Like they just show Randy Orton.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, because I watched it back on Hulu last night, and I was like waiting for that awkward bit to see if I could see what he was mouthing or whatever. They cut it out. So apparently it was a mistake, and apparently they do edit the shows if there are mistakes for Hulu, which I just thought was interesting. But oh boy, this segment. So first of all, Bray Wyatt calls out Randy Orton as Randy Orton's in the ring, being like, you know, you're afraid or whatever. So Bray Wyatt just reiterates the fact that he is a god and he is the omniscient presence and blah 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 and he knows everything. You're the worst god ever. Ever. And honestly, when he flipped over the sands of time clock thing that he had, his little hourglass, my immediate literal first reaction was, oh my gosh, that hourglass is gonna run out and Randy Orton's just gonna RKO him. Wouldn't that be the most Bray Wyatt thing ever? Like,
That
I
would have
am a
swung by it.
god, I am scary. Look at the sands of time are gonna run out and it's gonna be terrible. And I'm just vaguely making threats and oh, nope, RKO, and now I'm dead. Like, that would just be the most Bray Wyatt thing ever, right? But no, this whole journey of trying to find Bray Wyatt or whatever, it's just so indicative of the downfall of this story. The whole time, I honestly just kept wishing that this came before the first match and before their whole feud. Like, I wish that this could be the beginning and not after we've already seen Randy Orton have the upper hand in every possible way, right? Like, I talked about that last week, how Randy Orton has had the upper hand this entire time. And that just continues here, right? Because Randy Orton is going and it's spooky and he's looking for Bray Wyatt and there's a stick arrow, like he's a Boy Scout who made an arrow out of sticks on a wall. And I was wondering what would happen if you flipped the arrow over. I wanted someone to like pop out of the boiler room or something. Like, I wanted something to happen, but nothing happened. Eric Rowan was just lurking, right? These segments just kind of illustrate the ineffectiveness of Eric Rowan, too. Because if, like, especially the one with the doors. So it says only one way out, choose wisely, right? So it's supposed to indicate that, like, if you open one door, you might be able to escape and you'll be okay. But if you open the other door, then there's super bad danger afoot, right? Like the whole tiger behind the door kind of thing. You will be eaten rawr. But instead, Randy Orton opens both doors and he's still fine. Nothing happened.
Because Bray Wyatt is the worst person to try and inflict punishment that I've ever seen.
The worst, right? And if Eric Rowan was supposed to be a threat, this is why I asked if Eric Rowan or if Randy Orton could see Eric Rowan. Because if the whole thing is supposed to be you open the door and then Eric Rowan's going to come out and get you, like he's the monster who's going to come out and get you, right? Shouldn't he have come out and gotten Randy Orton? When Randy Orton opened that door, shouldn't he have attacked him? Shouldn't he have done
This is
something
very
to
true.
him?
Although Eric Rowan is, and I don't mean this as a joke. Like I think this is legitimate. Eric Rowan is as effective as James Ellsworth.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, when has Eric Rowan ever done a thing?
I mean, when he got his sparkly banjo music, I think he won a match once.
Yeah, and he fought the Big Show that one time, but yeah.
Yeah.
So And what did you think of the final bit? Well, I mean, you've got lots.
But no, I'm not done with my Eric Rowan is ineffective thing. So not only does Eric Rowan...
I love the idea that, like, no, I need to put this point across because people might not be aware.
No. This all builds to my favorite thing, though, right? Because not only does Eric Rowan not attack Randy Orton and not do anything to Randy Orton, so maybe
that would be logical.
Yeah, that would be logical. And so apparently, like, Randy Orton had to make eye contact before Eric Rowan can be activated and have power or something. I mean, like, let's be honest, he's still just going to beat Eric Rowan. We've already seen him beat Eric Rowan, right? Like, that's already happened, which is why I wish all of this happened at the beginning of the feud, because I was of two minds. Like, I was absolutely loving the bonkersness of this. Like, 100% this was written for me, but I also couldn't help but be like, you have already beaten all of these people all of the time. But my favorite thing about it is that not only does Eric Rowan not pounce and not attack, he's locked in. He's so ineffective that he has to jiggle the handle of the door and he can't get out. And now he's stuck. Like, isn't that just so Eric Rowan?
So Eric Rowan, right?
Eric Rowan. And I mean, I enjoyed Randy Orton coming up behind Bray Wyatt in the mask, and Bray Wyatt is so oblivious that he doesn't see that someone's like literally over his shoulder. Like, Randy Orton is right there and Bray's like, where are you, Randy? Where's everybody? Who could possibly be around? Like, Eric Rowan's locked in a cupboard or something somewhere, so we don't know where he is. But just
ladies and gentlemen, the thing that's weird is, imagine that you told somebody 12 months ago, listen, guys, the only thing that's going to make a Bray Wyatt feud really interesting is the work of Randy Orton.
Baffling. Baffling. And the thing is,
SmackDown is magical.
I continue to like Bray Wyatt's performances. Like, I think Bray Wyatt delivers his material very, very well. But Bray Wyatt is so delusional. Like, he has such delusions of grandeur as a character. And I mean, I'm into this. I'm into the idea of the man who hears voices in his head comes up against, like, the guy who thinks he's the new face of fear and a god, and it's psychological, and there are mind games, and they're playing off one another. But just the way the story is being told just illustrates how ineffective Bray Wyatt is. Like, choose only one door. Only one door can lead to you getting away. Randy Orton opens both doors, and he's fine, and he just walks out the way he came. Like... So on one hand, I did love these segments 100% because they were bonkers and they were fun, and I just wish that this had happened either in a vacuum or before we'd already seen Randy Orton get the upper hand, because I kind of loved it in the way that I just shake my head now at Bray Wyatt and go, oh honey, like, just no, just stop, just
no. Yeah, it's absolutely baffling. And you're right about everything you said about Bray Wyatt. He is pish now, sadly.
It's very unfortunate.
So, we got a tag team match with Carmella and Natalya against Naomi and Nikki. Now, I don't have anything to say about the match, but I do have something that I'd like to say about the insert promos that they did at the beginning. So I will do that in a second. But what did you think of the whole match and thing?
I mean, I thought it was fun enough. I thought the match itself wasn't remarkable, but it wasn't bad. I think, you know, I enjoyed watching it. There was nothing that really stood out, good or bad. But, I mean, considering Carmella and Naomi were in the ring, that's kind of praise.
That's it?
Well, and I also like that Carmella got the win over Nikki and then totally owned it. Like, I think Carmella is stepping it up as a character hardcore, because she gets the pin on Nikki, and I don't necessarily love all of the random roll-ups, just because it seems like there are a lot of roll-ups of doom going on SmackDown, but I like the story they're telling with it, so I'll give it a pass, because Carmella's like, two times, I've beaten you two times now, and she's gloating about it, and she's like just completely being a dick about the whole thing. And I like that a lot. Something that still kind of baffles me, and I know this is something I just have to let go, but like, remember when Carmella debuted and Natalya was attacking Carmella repeatedly, and then Carmella was attacking Natalya repeatedly?
Mm-hmm.
Like, remember how now they're best friends? It seems a bit strange. But again, it's they're telling a different story now. I'm willing to kind of go with it, but it's a detail that I don't want to let pass because we never really got Carmella versus Natalia as like a blow off thing, or we never actually, like, they sort of skipped a step. It was just, you are a heel, now you are friends. And we've talked about how I like a little bit more complexity in my character motivations than that. But yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about it. The inset promos were something.
Here is my thought process on these four women. Because I figured out by the end of this whole match segment, I've got my fully formed opinions on these women. Naomi, I love her Ekis promo. Her Ekis intro. She has taken loads of ecstasy. She's having a wee dance. Go for it, love. Give it Yaldi. I'm happy for you. However, she cannot cut a promo.
No.
She can't do it. So she's out. Nikki Bella, I love on Total Divas. Future Total Bellas. But Nikki Bella's not believable in her current character, I don't think. When she did the backstage insert promo thing, I didn't believe her. When she did the thing after the match where she was like, this is just the beginning with Carmella, I didn't really believe her. I think she's better in the ring than she was, but I don't really think it's working with Nikki Bella right now. In that sense, Natalia is awful at promos.
Yes.
Like, I don't believe 1% of her. I don't buy any part of it. Natalia is like one of those women that like would, she's like a porn actress in a way.
Yes.
Like, she's given so. Like, you need to carry this piece of paper to the printer before you take it up the arse. And she like researches how she would walk to the printer. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, you can see her thinking about how to carry that piece of paper with gusto.
She's like, so when I carry the paper, who is it being taken to? Who's on the other side? You know, you can tell that's what she's doing. It's ridiculous. The last person is Carmella. I did not like Carmella for a long time. But Carmella is more believable than all three of these women combined. Her promo was good. She was good in the match. And afterwards, she completely owned what she was doing. Carmella should be Becky Lynch's next opponent. She is way outperforming the other three. Way outperforming them. And she's believable. I buy that who she is Carmella. Like, I don't think, oh, that's a woman playing Carmella. I've seen Natalia and enough other things, and she's not convincing me that she's not what I think she is, which is a really nice lady who's in the Hart family. Like, that's who loves cats. Like, that's what she is.
I think the problem with Natalia is she's not believable as a babyface or a heel.
Yeah, but
like,
as a character,
she's just never believable.
And she just, I just don't think she knows how to act.
No.
And that's just what it is. So that was just kind of what I got from all those four. I don't know if you want to follow up on any of that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting because this week I actually thought about Carmella. Maybe it's good that she got called up. Like, I think in ring-wise, I don't think it's good that she got called up to the main roster because I think she really could have used more time to, like, work on the wrestling aspect of things. But I really am believing Carmella's character, and I'm believing her a lot more than I did when she was in NXT. Like, because in NXT, she was, you know, a happy babyface, and it sort of worked because you still had her association with Enzo and Cass, and you had her association with Bayley, but she was always kind of, like, either Bayley's friend or the lady who was with Enzo and Cass who's trying to kind of be female Enzo, and something didn't click, and it's clicking now. And it's working, and she's telling more compelling stories, and she's more interesting now than she was in NXT, which is a compliment to her and a compliment to SmackDown. And I think it's great. The thing about Nikki Bella, and I'm glad you brought her up too, something that kind of struck me during this, like, I actually do believe Nikki Bella more than I believe, like, Naomi or Natalia. And I don't know what you think about this. I think they're doing the Nikki Bella return from injury and capitalizing on her babyface popularity. I think they're doing with Nikki Bella what they should have done with Seth Rollins.
I think the reason I agree with that is maybe not for the reason that you want me to. I think the reason I agree with that is because I think Seth Rollins would have been propelled into like a super babyface from it.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Nikki is like they need to find a way that like that she like. Nikki Bella has got, and I don't mean this as an insult, but it's going to sound like it. she has a voice that just naturally kind of sounds fake. Like,
oh no,
her,
it does.
Her inflection and not, it does kind of sound fake.
And
so
she constantly
like,
speaks in questions.
Yeah, and like, I feel like she needs to work on that because you're right. She is much better than Naomi and Natalia, but that's like, I mean, you know, that's not
the
high
bar's
praise.
Not too high there.
I couldn't think of any comparisons that didn't make fun of somebody, so I'm not going to do any. But like, you know, that's like saying, well, you could be a better Batman than George Clooney. Well, thanks for that. You know, but yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm interested to see, you know, if Carmella keeps stepping up as a heel, then Nikki will kind of have to step it up as a babyface. Because what I was thinking at the end of it was, if Nikki doesn't start stepping up soon, I think people will start cheering Carmella for being a good heel. That's where I think it would. But that's, Carmella's so good at this, in this role, and Nikki's so average at what she's doing, that Nikki needs to step it up, because now wrestling fans, whether we like it or not, is like, they cheer good heels, you know?
Yeah.
Only way that they don't is if the babyface is really good. The babyface, like, Daniel Bryan got cheered so much because he was so great as a babyface, whereas if you put Roman Reigns in there against Triple H, people just cheer Triple H because, you know, they remember him from before and he was good when wrestling was cool. So, you know, there's
and
no need to
old wrestling's
cheer.
Always way better than what we have now.
It's true. So, up next, we had The Miz coming out with Maurice for his celebration. He comes out with Maurice. They have a headshot and different photos of him stuck up in the ring. They show a video package, which is him. It covers his entire WWE career, essentially.
Well, and earlier in the show, there was a little bit backstage where he was covering up, I forget which sports person. Was it LeBron James?
LeBron James, yeah.
Up? Okay. Yeah, this is how well I follow sports. But they had him putting his portrait up in the arena instead of LeBron James, because clearly a picture of The Miz belongs in the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland.
I do love that. I love that in America, all you have to do is like threaten to like put something on top of a sports star, and it's like the worst thing you could ever do.
Apparently it is.
So basically we have The Miz come out, a video package plays, which is one of the most tremendous videos they've played in a long time. Like, it really, I got goosebumps watching it.
I loved how serious the video package was. Like, they played it very straight, and even the song was like, I'm a survivor, and it was all valiant and everything. And they're showing clips from the real world. And they're showing everything that everyone's going to hate, right? Like, it was a very accurate depiction of The Miz's career, and it was exactly the type of video package that The Miz would produce for himself, because he finds all of these traits so heroic in himself, and everybody else is just going to be like, you unbelievable prick.
And it reminded me of the WrestleMania 27 video package that he had, which was also excellent. You know, it's like, The Miz, the best compliment I can give The Miz is that I think The Miz is, if this continues into the new year, I think he'll have overtaken how good he was in 2010. And that was when he was at his best. You know, when he just won the title and all that, he was great. But this is, he's doing some really great stuff here. The video package plays, then he points out his parents. I cannot express how much I popped to see Miz's dad again.
Oh man, so good to see him back. What was on his shirt? Was John Cena on his shirt?
It looked like John Cena, and then like it just reminded me of somebody on YouTube before had made like a Titantron for his dad of just that face that his dad has.
Yeah,
where he doesn't have any expression. Then Miz said something about getting a burger. I don't know if his dad owns a burger joint or something.
Yeah, his dad owns like a sandwich shop.
Ah, okay. I would totally go to that if I was in Cleveland. So then he points out Dolph Ziggler's parents. Even Dolph Ziggler's parents look annoying. Like, you know what I mean? Like even they, you go, oh god. Like Dolph Ziggler. Like the funny thing is like, the thing with Miz's mom is like, Miz's mom looks quite strange, right?
Yeah.
But like, you can tell she's the Miz's mom. Do you know what I mean? Like you
well,
can
he looks more like her than he does his dad.
He does, but I mean, it's not a great cherry to choose from either way.
No.
But you know, he's done the best with what he had.
It's impressive that the Miz is as attractive as he is.
Yeah, I don't know how those two people created a child that was attractive. I don't know how that happened, but fair play to them. So he points out Ziggler's parents and he says, you know, it must be hard for you because you created a world-class elite-level loser, which was just a great line. Ziggler's music hit, Ziggler comes out.
What's funny is Ziggler's dad was just laughing through the whole thing, basically. Like, you
Yeah,
could tell he was just like, I'm on camera, this is hilarious. Because I have a
his
famous
mum plays
kid.
along. His
His
mum plays
mom
along.
was incredible. She was so over the top. It was great. She was reacting. She was shaking her head. She was making like big arm gestures, like, no, stop talking about my son. I love Dolph Ziggler's mom. I want Dolph Ziggler's mom to face off with Miz's dad.
Intergender brilliance.
I think it would be amazing.
So then Ziggler comes out. Now, when I was watching it at the time, when Ziggler came out, I kind of rolled my eyes. Oh God, here we go, more of this. Because I was kind of done with the story. I've enjoyed it, but it's time to move on. And then Ziggler and Miz really won me over because Ziggler talks about, you know, don't talk to my family like that. If you want to say something to me, say it to my face. This is my city. Miz talks about him getting beat over and over. Ziggler talks about him being a cheater, so enjoy his tainted title. Miz talks about the record books not reflecting that he was cheating. It would show his mansion, his hot wife, his championships, his money, and that Ziggler's career is a disaster, and he'd be ashamed if it was his. Ziggler told Miz that he used to have something. Sorry, Miz then kept saying to him, like, you know, you used to have something. You were almost great, but you're just a mid-level guy, or you opened the show, and you've got nothing to offer. And then he was like, you know, something like, unless you're going to put your career in the line, I'm not going to fight you again. And then Ziggler stopped him and said, you're right. I'm not as big a star as I'd hoped I would be. My career hasn't quite gone the way I wanted it to. But sometimes you love something so much that it hurts and it doesn't love you back sometimes. And it's no secret that wrestling's all I've got, 300 days a year. And then he said, I'll put my career on the line. Miz comes back into the ring and he says, so you're in 2 weeks at No Mercy, you'll put your career on the line. And then Miz was just a great part in line. He was like, if you're not going to put yourself out of your misery, I'll do it for you. Dropped the mic, walked out. This was incredible.
I loved it. I loved everything about this. And it's interesting because we've seen Dolph Ziggler's story kind of just get more and more and more pathetic, right? And that's the story they're telling us. And I think that's why it's compelling, because it feels real. There's not a disconnect. It's not Bray Wyatt saying he's scary and then failing to be scary in any way whatsoever. It's Dolph Ziggler saying, no, I'm desperate. I've been losing. And he's finally reacting to the losses, right? Like, Dolph Ziggler is
Yeah.
actually reacting to the fact that he hasn't been able to do what he says he's going to do. And he's miserable about it. It's tearing him up inside. Losses are affecting him now. He's beyond showing off. He's beyond just being the guy that has great matches. He realizes that, you know what? Miz isn't wrong when he calls Dolph Ziggler a loser. And the absolute disdain on the Miz's face. Like, there's just something that works so well about the Miz saying, you know what, Dolph? No, you're gonna say one more shot, and you know the answer is no, Dolph, because you've had plenty of shots and you just can't do it. So I'm done. Like, there's no reason for, and Miz is right, there is no reason for him to give Dolph Ziggler another title shot. And Dolph Ziggler doesn't come back with bravado and say, like, no, because I deserve it, because blah 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 blah. He basically is like, you know what? I don't deserve it. And that's why I will put my career on the line, because either way, I'll be out of my misery. And there's something kind of heart-wrenching about that, actually, because it feels like it's coming from a very real place. And it's the story that we've been seeing told on television through their actions being told to us in words as well. And I like when those things match up and we can kind of latch on to that. And their roles are so pitch perfect, right? Like, so often in wrestling lately, it seems like we talk about people trying to play roles or people trying to tell stories, and it just doesn't work because, you know, they don't match their character or they can't perform it properly. These two were pitch perfect the whole time, and it was great. And I'm not a Dolph Ziggler fan at all for the reasons that Miz is saying. Like, I haven't been a fan because, yeah, Dolph doesn't deserve more shots. Dolph does lose all the time. Dolph is kind of pathetic. Dolph is ineffective. But him saying that he'll put his entire career on the line through tears, like, Dolph Ziggler performed this so well, and I think probably because a lot of it is coming from a very real place. Like, he looked like he was going to cry. He had tears in his eyes when he said he'll put his career on the line. And The Miz reacting to that, too, he was just, like, because The Miz was so done with Dolph Ziggler at that point. He was walking away. He turns, and he goes, wait, what? And, like, almost sprints back to the ring because he has such glee in the thought of, wait, I could be the one to end your career. Me, The Miz, that could be in the history books under my name, that I took your career from you. Awesome. Right? Because of course The Miz would love that, because The Miz is an absolute asshole. And I mean, I like the fact that The Miz said, and this isn't just you going to show up in NXT. This isn't a 30-day sabbatical. You're not going to Raw your entire career. They made a point of that. This isn't going to be you're fired and then the next day you show up somewhere else. This is your career. And I'm compelled by it. And it actually, like, logic says that Dolph Ziggler is going to win this. But for some reason, there's enough doubt in my mind. I'm able to suspend my disbelief on this one. I'm able to go with it to the point where I'm like, oh boy, is The Miz going to win?
Yeah, I mean,
he won't. But in the story, I'm caught up enough in it that I'm like, oh, this is interesting.
The best thing about this is that I could see it going either way, and I actually want both of them to happen.
Yeah,
like I want Dolph Ziggler to beat The Miz. I want Dolph Ziggler to finally, you know, be able to shut him up, because Dolph Ziggler's been good, but then I also want The Miz to continue with what he's been doing. And so I'm kind of torn with both, and I think this has just been a great storyline. And Ryan Ward, who is the writer for SmackDown, this guy, just let him book WrestleMania and SummerSlam. And let him book everything. Let him book everything. Just leave this guy to it. Make him the new Pat Patterson. Just have Vince and Ryan Ward in a room. That's all you need.
I really think it's a testament to Ryan Ward that SmackDown is so good. And, I mean, it's not that surprising, because Ryan Ward was the lead on NXT for a long time, and then he got moved to SmackDown. And we're seeing the kind of logical storytelling that Ryan Ward brought to NXT.
He wasn't really able to do it when it was, you know, before, like, when he was originally put in SmackDown, because it's the same brand. You know, it's just essentially, okay, Ryan, give us a lesser version of the stories on Raw, but don't further anything, because nothing can happen on this show that people would have to watch before they watch Raw next week. You know?
Yeah, it was basically just the cast-offs of Raw. It was not, like, it wasn't its own story. It wasn't its own monster. It didn't have its own identity. Now SmackDown has its own identity, and it's working, and it's great.
Then we got Becky Lynch coming out for a match, and she was attacked by Alexa Bliss straight away, slammed her into the floor a few times, grabbed the title, told her she didn't deserve it, and then went to the back. Nice and quick kind of heat for Alexa Bliss on Becky. I enjoyed it.
I liked it too. And it's interesting, because a lot of times when I'm talking about women's wrestling and whatnot, I'm like, no, they need time for matches, they need time for stuff. But you know what? Sometimes something like this does get more across than a match would. And this doesn't feel like, at the beginning of SmackDown, when Natalia was attacking Carmella and Carmella was attacking Natalia and it didn't really seem to be going anywhere, that was frustrating that we weren't getting matches from the women. This isn't frustrating me, because the story is being told really well. And I like that. I like the fact that they're telling a story and they're being allowed to develop personalities, and it makes Becky more sympathetic and it makes Alexa look like more of a threat. And I mean, Alexa's a dick. She's an absolute dick. She cut a Fallout promo about how, you know, Becky's a loser and she just needed to show Becky the loser that Alexa knows Becky is and all that kind of stuff, because Alexa has kind of delusions of grandeur too. And I mean, not that she's not good. She's absolutely good, but she hasn't really done anything character-wise to show how she's so much more deserving than Becky. Like, we've seen Becky work so hard for the championship, and now she's the champion, and she's very deserving of it. But in Alexa's mind, because Alexa's a jerk, Becky doesn't deserve this, because Alexa was born to be better And I like the story. It's simple, right? Like, all the stories in the women's division, especially, they're very simple. They're not super convoluted. There's not a whole lot extra going on, but it's just simple. People don't like each other. In one case, there's a title involved, and it's just nice pro wrestling storytelling where I want to see some people fight.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Zany Curt Hawkins was up next, saying he's got an announcement next week. He talked about it through his legs. Sondra loved it. Most of us scratched their heads, but we're all wondering what the announcement is going to be next week on SmackDown.
I'm very curious what the announcement is going to be next week on SmackDown, and you're right, I did love this. Of course I did. Sleep needs to get 8 hours of Curt Hawkins. Delightful.
I'm shaking my head.
I know you are.
AJ Styles was interviewed by Charlie. I actually do like it, but, you know. Anyway, AJ Styles was interviewed by Charlie. He said that he's been beaten by Ambrose and Cena. He said he's already beat them. He's already beat both of them. And later tonight, he's going to beat up Dean Ambrose again.
I love the phrase where he's like, I beat up John Cena, and then I beat John Cena. I beat up Dean Ambrose, and then I beat Dean Ambrose.
He's so good. My favorite part of the main event, AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, is at the beginning of the match, they were given the kind of big match feel of announcing the participants. And AJ Styles kind of walks towards JoJo a bit. Not like super close to her, but just like 3 inches more towards her than he was. And then she says, and he would like to be announced as the face that runs the place. And AJ just gives this kind of like, yeah, I am, look. Mm-hmm. Which I loved, obviously, because, you know, it's AJ Styles and I love him.
He has the details down.
He does. So they have this kind of good match, and it was pretty good. I was into it. AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, and then towards the end, they were going back and forth, and then AJ went on the outside and took a shot at Cena. Cena got angry. Styles went for the phenomenal forearm. Ambrose went for a roll up, but Cena got up in the apron, and that distracted the ref. Then Dean Ambrose ran out and hit John Cena, which I actually agreed with. I was like, yeah, he just potentially cost you there. So yeah, you should hit him.
Yeah.
And then Dean ended up getting rolled up by Styles for the win. After the match, Cena came in, hit an attitude adjustment on both guys, then posed with a belt and walked to the back. I thought this was really good build for their match. And I kind of think all three guys are doing decent stuff to advance themselves as part of the story. I don't think there's one of them who's like not putting anything into it. I think all three are, and it's kind of working for me. So I'm excited for No Mercy, and AJ Styles is the best.
I think that's one of the best compliments I can give it, is that it feels like all three men belong in this match. I mean, like, realistically, it doesn't seem like Dean Ambrose fits just because, you know, he's Dean Ambrose. But the way they're telling the story, it is compelling. And I like the fact that all three of them are interacting with each other. You don't have AJ Styles and John Cena are the story, and then there's Dean Ambrose who just isn't doing anything, right? Like, Dean Ambrose is interacting with John Cena. Dean Ambrose is interacting with AJ Styles. AJ Styles has issues with both Dean Ambrose and John Cena. You know, John Cena has issues with Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles. All the combinations of them are interacting in complex ways. And that's something I liked a lot about them using John Cena on commentary here. Like, I think John Cena was pretty good on commentary. I don't think he's as good at it as some other people, but I mean, I think he does a good job. And
he was good.
He was good. And I liked the way that AJ Styles attacked John Cena and Dean Ambrose also attacked John Cena. And it seemed to make sense. And it made it make a lot more sense for John Cena to hit the attitude adjustments after the match, because he had a reason to be pissed at both of them, because both of them just attacked him too. You know, so it wasn't just John Cena coming out and attitude adjusting people for no reason. He had a direct reason to retaliate against them. And no, the match was really good, too. And I think AJ Styles is probably magic, because he's gotten some good matches out of Dean Ambrose.
It was very good. But let's talk about Talking Smack. Before we talk about Talking Smack, I just want to bring something up. I want to bring it up now before we get to the end of the podcast, because the news has just broken as we are talking. Sadly, Jamie Noble has been stabbed twice.
What?
In a road rage incident. He apparently just got home, and there was a guy behind him, and they got into a fight, and Basically, he's been stabbed a couple of times, so I don't really know anything else, but a Pro Wrestling Sheet have reported it so far. He was treated, taken to the emergency room. He's still in hospital, but he's not in ER anymore, so hopefully that's a good sign, and hopefully he's okay. So
Yeah, that's
that's
scary.
all. Just wanted to fill that in. Talking Smack is up next. One thing they said during Talking Smack, I know that they need to build things up, but Renee Young said something, and I was like, Renee, don't be saying this. She was talking about Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt, and she was like, I mean, rarely can anyone beat Bray Wyatt at his own game.
Oh
No,
my
Renee.
gosh. Except everybody.
Everyone beats him at his own game.
Everyone beats Bray Wyatt.
The only person that can't beat Bray Wyatt at his own game is Eric Rowan because he gets locked in cupboards and can't get out. Like, there's just nothing.
So true.
So, just two things on Talking Smack, I guess, are worth talking about. Becky Lynch cut a really great promo on Alexa Bliss, where she kind of got some fire, and I liked it. I thought it was, she was kind of responding to the idea that Alexa saying that she didn't deserve the title. And she kind of gave a very passionate response as to why she thinks she does.
Yeah,
I
I really
figured
liked
that
her line. I don't have it like written verbatim in front of me, but I liked when she said, "This title is my life, and if you think you're going to take my life from me, then I will ruin yours."
yeah, it was superb. It really was. But so I'm watching Talking Smack, and I knew that Cena and Becky were the guests. I was like, oh, I'll give it a watch. And then Cena's thing started, and I just kind of found myself, I was kind of slumped in a chair on the train while I was watching it. When you're kind of comfortable and you just kind of you slouch down, and like I was getting more upright and more upright and more upright, and then I'm moving forward more and I'm moving forward more, and I was just so into it. Like, so I don't have all the verbiage here, but John Cena talks about, Dean Ambrose calling him a lazy part-timer. How that insult's lazy, talks about, the fact that he doesn't dress in male talent is because he surrounds himself by the five people that can help him in life and help him make the most of things. He's flying straight to
And Dean Ambrose would slow him down.
and Dean Ambrose would slow him down. He talks about how he's flying to New York to promote Total Bellas. He talks about how he went to the reason that he wasn't on the first Backlash pay-per-view or SmackDown pay-per-view, sorry, was that he had to go to China to do international relations. And one day when Dean Ambrose might be in front of 100,000 people in Shanghai or Beijing for a WrestleMania, that he helped start that and he's proud of that. And one of the great lines at the end was he said, the misconception is that, we don't like each other. Dean Ambrose doesn't like John Cena. John Cena doesn't care about Dean Ambrose. And then he also said that, there's this misconception that Dean Ambrose is doing all this stuff, and he said, but Dean Ambrose makes millions of dollars and he's handsomely compensated for what he does, so Dean Ambrose is fine. Like, John Cena nailed this, absolutely nailed it. I thought it was incredible.
It was incredible, and it felt so real because it was, right? Like, you don't often hear John Cena talk about his position in the company except to say, I'm a company man. Of course, I love being on top of the WWE. The WWE is amazing. It's very rare that John Cena kind of opens up and gets a little bit more like, no, this is how I feel about my place in WWE, and this is what I do for this company. You don't hear him talk about it very often. Hearing him talk about it was compelling. And I mean, the whole lazy part-timer comment, he was like, part-timer, maybe. He didn't deny that he was a part-timer, which I thought was interesting too, because normally they kind of shy away from mentioning that about John Cena, right? So there's a big shift in the presentation of John Cena from WWE and also from John Cena himself. Like, I think it is getting under his skin that they're calling him, the old one, or that he's on his way out. And, I think all the stuff he said to The Rock about being part-time and like coming back and leaving and all of that kind of stuff, I think that probably still resonates with him. And I think that him going off and doing more things, it's probably a really interesting process going on in John Cena's head, right? Like, do I still feel authentic doing all of this? Now, I think part of the difference is that John Cena's doing a lot of things to promote WWE. Because whereas The Rock would go away and then he was the WWE champion and didn't take his title on talk shows and stuff, right? Like, I don't see John Cena ever doing stuff like that. John Cena's always promoting WWE. He's hosting things. He's, you know, getting his own name out there, but he's very, like, very WWE-centric. But it was just, it was really, really interesting hearing him talk about, you know, I like the fact that he's mentioning that he's going to China and opening up opportunities for the next generation of superstars or whatever. Like, it seems like he's accepting the fact that, no, he's friggin' important and he's not going to shy away from it. And it didn't, for some reason, I don't know how you felt about it, it didn't come across as super arrogant. Even though everything he was saying sounded very arrogant, if you think about it. Like, you know, like, John Cena doesn't care about Dean Ambrose. No, I don't dress in male talent because I, you know, don't have time for that kind of thing. I don't know why it came off just more matter-of-fact than arrogant. Like, it didn't come across as necessarily asshole John Cena. And we've seen asshole John Cena on Total Divas. Like, there's some of that in him.
Yeah. I'll be honest, like, for me, the thing I take away from this is that I want John Cena to become 16-time world champion at WrestleMania with Ric Flair in the front row. Like, that's what I realized from this. That's what I want. I want the story. I don't want John Cena to get it straight away. I don't. I want this story of, can John Cena still do it? You know, because the one thing John Cena's not had in his career, and I know you hate always, like, why do we always need to build to WrestleMania? But John Cena always at WrestleMania is the babyface that nobody likes.
Yeah.
All the time. And, like, wouldn't it be kind of fitting that in one of his last WrestleManias as a full-timer, his last time winning a world title, he actually does it and the fans are behind him?
That's another interesting thing, because I feel like the fans are behind John Cena right now. Like, if you listen to the reaction with those attitude adjustments that he hit on Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles, I mean, AJ Styles is very popular. He's great at being a heel, and he's great at getting booed, but he's very popular. Dean Ambrose maybe isn't as popular as he used to be, because it seems like a lot more crowds are booing him now. But, I mean, really, even just a year ago, can you imagine that people would be cheering John Cena giving attitude adjustments to AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose?
SmackDown is a magical place.
It is. It really is. And I think there's something about embracing authenticity that SmackDown is kind of nailing right now. And it makes things more compelling. And even if John Cena, the words he's saying sound like he should be a complete asshole, maybe it's just the authenticity that's just ringing so true that makes me go, no, you're kind of right. You can't fault them.
Yeah, that's a shame. That it's not, you know, it's taken so long for this to happen.
Yeah, I think it seems like maybe they were just trying to protect the aura of John Cena for so long that they wanted him to be untouchable, right? Now he's touchable, which sounds weird as I say it out loud, but you know what I mean, right? Like, he has a level of vulnerability that we've never seen from him, and he has a level of authenticity that we've never seen from him. He always had the veneer of wacky jokes or shouty promos or hustle, loyalty, respect. Now he's like, fuck it, I'm just gonna be John Cena. I'm the best. I know I'm the best. I'm the most important. I know I'm the most important. That's just true. Let's see where we go from here.
So there you have it. That was SmackDown Live this week. I think it's very clear that both of us have a firm thumbs up on this one.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will try our best to get it out. I'm away for the week, so I will try to get with Sandra at some point if I can. If not, we have backup options available.
There will be a SmackDown summary.
There will be. There will be one in some form or fashion with somebody. And yeah, but we're going to have the Inside the Ropes live show with Jim Ross and Jim Cornette next Wednesday in London at the Islington Assembly Hall. VIPs sold out, limited general admission tickets left at insidetheropes.co.uk. I can't really say why, but trust me, if you're in the London area, you do not want to miss this. That's all I'm going to say about that. And then on Sunday, October 9th, we are going to be in Manchester with Cody Rhodes, opening up for the first time in a live forum in front of an audience about his WWE career. Lots of interesting things to hear about from him. And then if you're in Cork in Ireland, or in Ireland anywhere that want to come along to Cork on Tuesday the 11th of October, we'll be bringing Cody Rhodes over there as well. And also, tickets have just gone on sale for Broken Matt Hardy, the International Deletion Tour, which is already sold about half of the tickets for every city. So if you want to go VIP on that, the VIP option is the Skarsgård ticket. The general admission is the Obsolete Mule ticket. So please get either of them if you want at insidetheropes.co.uk. Next week, I'm going to be very busy with work, but sadly, I will not be able to watch the new Apprentice BBC episode or the new Still Game or the new Total Bellas. But trust me, I will be loading them all up and sitting with no phone or no Facebook or no Twitter for like a day when I get back from all that work. That's all the plugs, I think. Sondra,
it's going to kill me not to be like, Kenny, Still Game!
I was gonna suggest that you don't watch it until I watch it and we can watch it together, but you're not going to wait that long, so you can watch it, and then I'll tell you when I'm going to watch
it. How many days is it going to be that I would have to wait?
Like, I'll be watching it on the Wednesday, and it comes out on the Friday.
I'll try.
I don't like there's a world where Sondra sees Still Game before me. I don't like that. It's not good.
It does seem wrong. It seems like we should watch it together.
It does, yeah. Because you're going to have to wait for it to go up on iPlayer anyway, right?
Yeah.
On, you know, because you're going to fly over to the UK. Not that you would ever use any sort of illegal blocker.
Oh, of course. To watch it, of course. I only use iPlayer when I'm in the UK. Clearly.
Of course. So, Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes for all of this great tour news and all sorts of good stuff at Inside_the Ropes. Also, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheInsideNetwork. And we'll be having Retro Raw rundowns up there as well as this regular podcast feed. So check out, subscribe exactly. to YouTube.
And the last thing I want to say is to Twitter handle CNEAYLON50. You decided to tweet Sondra saying that you can't take any more wrestling podcast series with her. She has no knowledge. Please replace her. First of all, you didn't tweet that to Inside the Ropes, so I don't know how you were expecting us to see it. Second of all, just tweet it to her when you follow her is a bit of a stupid thing to do. And third, the fact that you disagree with someone isn't always a bad thing in life. I don't mean that as a joke. Genuinely, you don't have to agree with people, but she knows what she's talking about. She's intelligent, so fuck off.
Aw, thank
that
you.
That is the message. So, with that in mind, I say fuck off. I mean, you know, come from Australia to the UK and buy some tickets for Inside the Ropes. I keep listening to all of our podcasts. But yeah, fuck off as well. So thank you very much for listening. We will be back with the Retro Raw Rundown soon, probably today. It might be out already. Whatever. Listen to it. Bye.